You can ask it. If it's short, you can ask it. If it's a short question, and then maybe.
I don't know if there is an answer to that question, so let's ask me what you think today about. I can see in a meditation that the mind is getting calmer and calmer. I can see, like, I don't know, there is something coming up. And I can see very good how the mind goes, how something come big enough to distract me and to take me out of this state that is slowly like getting closer to something. I don't know how to really explain it. So I was thinking, I don't really understand what is it. Here you call it avidya. It's always saying something, or really one thought, one memory, one. And I think, how does it work? And what? How is it? Because it's very clear how the mind is really trying to get me out of this. But the mind is the mind. It's not an intelligent being trying to stop.
Okay. Leave it at that. Yesterday somebody asked me, and normally when I talk about the second noble truth, most of the time I say avijja is the condition for dukkha to arise. And then he questioned me and asked me if it's not tanha, so it means tanha, if that's not the cause. And of course he's right. It's not avijja that is the source of dukkha. It's our wanting, it's tanha. I make quite often the mistake to say it's avijja, and this is, of course, it's not correct. Yesterday I caught myself, when I was talking in German, I caught myself and thought, it's tanha. It has been in the memory, or I put it in the memory, and that's where it's coming from. When I talk out of the memory, things can be very wrong. Or things can be remembered wrong, I remember it, and then I forget it, and when the time comes, and I pull it up, and it might be wrong, because it's coming out of memory. And when I look at my whole life, my memory has always been very terrible. It's like a see, everything goes through. Nothing keeps in there. That was for me, of course, the most difficult time in school. Because you had to memorize a lot of things. And I was so terrible bad, so I tried to cheat. Because my memory was so bad. So when I went to university, I picked the subject, that I could understand. Where I don't have to memorize, where my understanding brings me. So the moment I understand something, I don't have to memorize. And with these things, with the Buddha's scriptures, I do remember things wrong. So you have to forgive me for that. Most of the times I'm not talking about the scriptures. Most of the times I'm not talking about the teachings of the Lord Buddha. Most of the time I talk about practice. And practice, and it was nice that I just heard this morning a talk of Than Ajahn where he just mentioned the same topic. Where he said the moment it goes into memory, it goes there and disappears there, and sometimes when you talk about it, you cannot call it up fast enough, so it comes out wrong. And then he says, the moment, something is coming out of the chai, that means heart, then it's right. And it's always right. But that, of course, only is valid for the heart that is experienced. In Thai it's called Lak Chai, the heart who is experienced in Dhamma. And the moment you have an experience in your heart, you have made an understanding, you have insight into the true nature of things, whatever comes out then out of the heart, out of this experience, or when you talk about your insight, then this is correct. Correct in the way of Dhamma, correct in the line of the truth. The moment memory comes in, of course, things can go wrong. That also. So you have to be careful, and if you catch me saying something wrong, you know, just please remind me or ask me if this is really correct. When I get in the habit, the longer I get into the habit in explaining something wrong, the deeper it is into the memory, and the more often it comes out. So if you don't correct me, you know, I go on telling you maybe wrong things. When I talk, for instance, when I talk about the Eightfold Path, I never talk about right understanding, right view, right livelihood, right concentration, right action, and so on, because I forget all the eight things. So I always talk about Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, because this I remember. And it's also because Thanachan Mahabua himself hardly talks about the Eightfold Path in right understanding, right view. He hardly explains it this way, but there are talks where he explains it. So I just don't remember. These things I do not remember. Difficult, because I don't have actually the experience of these things. And that's why I don't remember. But when I talk about Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, I remember them and I have an own understanding of it. I have an own experience it. I have an own insight into it. When I talk about Tanha, then it's very, I have never really contemplated Tanha. So when I talk about wanting or not wanting, then I normally talk in the line with greed and hate. But wanting and not wanting is not stopped at the time when greed and hate disappear. There is still Tanha. And Tanha comes out then, and we only use the word wanting. So when we associate wanting with greed and hate, then this is not correct. Wanting on the higher fetters, after greed and hate had been destroyed, there is still the wanting for the Rupa Chanas, so for the states of form, for the arupa chanas, for the formless states, for mana ditti, that is conceit in the way, you know, that I am greater or I am less or I am equal, and then there's restlessness and avijja. And wanting only stops the moment avijja has disappeared. So tanha, when the Lord Buddha says Tanha is the cause of the dukkha, then the dukkha only disappears the moment avijja has disappeared. Wanting only disappears the moment avijja has disappeared. So you have to forgive me, and you also have to listen. Sometimes listen carefully, and if you don't understand something that I explain, or if you think what I explain is wrongly, even if it comes down to experience, when I say this is like this or this is like that, and you have a different experience, don't hesitate to ask. Maybe it's the same experience, or maybe you can prove me wrong. Actually, you can do me a big favor by proving me wrong. That actually means that you have to have done quite a bit of work to prove me wrong. So it's something good for you and it's something good for me too. And it's now, because these talks are recorded, then of course it can cause some trouble. As long as they are still in voice form, as long as one only listens to it, one forgets it very easily. Or one doesn't see it as a stone in the path. The moment these talks would be transcribed into written form, then of course it's very obvious. And that's why they shouldn't be transcribed in any way or form, without, you know, being corrected afterwards. It's the same thing Thanachan Mahabua did. When the moment his talks were transcribed into the written form, he always corrected them. Because sometimes, you know, just the thinking goes too fast, and one doesn't find the right or the correct words for the situation, so they have to be corrected. Or his memory, you know, just stalled, and he couldn't remember correctly the Pali phrases, so these things had to be correct. The moment they are going in written form, these kind of mistakes become very obvious. As long as there are talks, and as long as one listens with his heart, one does not find it as a point of him. To talk about this experience that happened in a realm that is beyond our language is rather difficult, because language is limited to the experience that we normally make in the world. So when one talks about the experience that happened, when one goes beyond the world of thinking, when there's just experience, what kind of words does one use to describe this phenomenon? One has to find similes, and similes are still the best way to describe it, but each similar cannot be applied fully, each similar has its drawback. So each word one is using for this kind of experience, one can misunderstand it, or one can understand it correctly. So when we look at the paticca-samuppada, or the first condition, dependent origination, then it's said that avijja is the condition for all phenomena to arise. So when I talk about avijja, then I mostly talk about avijja as a person. Something that creates all these phenomena, that creates this illusion, and that creates this or that. It's a matter of language that I use. It's a matter of view, how I see these things. If I see it as an opponent, I call it a person. I also can see it as a condition that I want to destroy, then I see it as a condition. But it's not my way of looking at this. Thanachan Mahabua normally calls it the instigator. He calls avijja the instigator. Sometimes he calls it the head of thieves or the culprit. So it always uses, also most of the time, he uses words that describe more person than a phenomenon or a condition. But when we are correct, when we are really correct, then we have to use avijja is the condition for all things to arise. As long as we practice, it really does not matter that much. If we say it's a person or if we say it's a condition, we still have to understand this phenomena, condition or person. You have to understand what is illusion. You have to understand what is this magician. You have to understand what is kilesas, or what is really going on. And how do we understand? We understand by observing. The mind tries to press it into a scheme and tries to understand it in ways of views and opinions he has about the world. But this is not right understanding. The more often you observe it, the more precise our description becomes, and after a while we might have the understanding that we completely understood it. But it's the understanding, we have to recall, it's still the understanding of the mind, it's not the understanding of the heart. The heart has to understand. Once the heart understands it, and the way of investigation is the way of teaching the heart, once the heart understands it, it will let go. Once the heart understands the true nature of greed and hate, it will let go of it. But as long as we use in concept, as long as we try to understand with our mind, we will never be able to let go. As much as we want. But the wanting of letting go is still wanting. The understanding, the insight in the true nature of the things, is the only thing that let can go. That cuts through the fear. So this is something that we have to understand. The deeper we go, the more unfamiliar are the things that happen. But we do not go, we do not jump into this unknowingness, or we don't jump in this sort of things, we go slowly. The more we unravel, the more we understand. The more we understand, the more we can unravel. It's like a good example or a good similar is cleaning up the attic of your house. In the attic of the house, you have stored for eons and eons of lives all the memories, all the things that you still didn't want to throw away, that you still keep within your heart, and the heart is in this, the attic. So, once you decide to clean up the attic and to throw out all those things that are in the attic or that are in your heart, then, first of all, you have to force the door open because it's so cramped. You have to force the door open and take out the big things first, the big obstacles. Once you removed all the big obstacles, then the smaller items come. When you see an old photograph, for instance, you remember it, and then all the memories are coming back, and then you waver to throw it away because you still like the memory. So when you clean up your attic and want to throw, make it really clean and make it really, really lightning or really bright, then you don't waver. You see that photograph and you chuck it out. You throw it out. Once you removed all these gross items and then the small items and then the little items, then you start to clean up the dust. You take a Hoover and clean it up, and then after you clean it up, you clean the windows, you wipe the windows, and the sun is coming in. Once the sun is coming in, you will see more dirt. And this is then when you see the fine dust or the fine dirt, you wipe it with a wet cloth, you wipe it off. And then, after you wipe off the dust, you see the stains. Once you see the stains, each of these stains have to be cleaned differently. And this similar is the similar of going the path of practice. In the beginning of the practice, the obstacles are big, but once they are removed, they give us the feeling now we can move in our heart, giving us a feeling of freedom. Yet we don't see all the dirt or the small item. We have the feeling that in the attic now there is some room, or in our heart now there is some room, and in the beginning we might not see all the small items that are still cluttering the place, or still cluttering the attic, our heart. So it's a long, long process. Until we really see the stains on the floor, on the walls, or in the window. And then, one by one, we remove. Our wisdom of removing it has been trained from the big obstacles down to the small. Once we have overcome, you know, the attachment to the things that are in the attic, once we have overcome to the attachments that are lingering within our heart, and we have used wisdom, you know, just, you know, look at it and chuck it out, look at it and chuck it out, until there's nothing left, then we do the fine work of cleaning the rest up. So this is the work of practice. This is the path of practice. It's like a similar of cleaning up one's attic, where one has gathered so much things one did not want to throw away, one did not want to chuck out, one still feels attached to. And all what is in the attic, or all what is in our heart, in our heart, we still feel attached to it. So it's difficult. In the beginning, it's difficult to rip it out. Once we get in the mood to rip it out or to chuck it out, then it will become easier. Until we get to the fine stains of dirt that are still making the room or the attic dirty, or still making our heart dirty, so that it cannot shine in its full light. Once we removed all the stains, and the source of the stains is nothing than avijja, then our room, or our attic, or our heart will become extremely bright. And there's nothing that can stain it anymore. If dust flies by, then it just flies by, but it does not land. It has no way to attach to our heart anymore. So if the filth of the world comes by and flies by the heart of the Arahant, it just flies by, but it does not attach anymore. It cannot hold on the bright, shining heart. So this is experience. So however you describe the experience of cleaning up your attic might differ from person to person. And it's difficult. When we go on this path of practice, the deeper we go, the more and the deeper our insights are into the true nature of things, the more difficult is it to describe it. We have to look for words, we have to look for similes, how really to describe this situation or this experience properly. But whenever we use the language of the world, then this language is bound to the determination that we gave these words. So another person might not understand it correctly in the way we explain it. He understands it only the moment he has made the same experience. Then he understands, even if that other person use different words for describing. There I always use the word, another example, the example of two visitors going to Rome, or whatever city you choose. People who actually have been to the city of Rome will know if the other person has been to Rome or if the other person has just read about the description of people who have been to Rome. The experience is different. Once we have been to Rome, we know if somebody else has been to Rome or if he just reads or memorizes the description. In our path of practice, that is something, if we have practiced long enough and if we have gained a lot of insights in the true nature of the things, we can immediately disguise somebody who has just read about the path of practice, who has just memorized all of the suttas, all of the description of the Lord Buddha. We will know it because he just can use the words that he memorized. He cannot use his own experience. The own experience can be described in many, many ways. Sometimes, when one listens to the talks of Thanacha Mahaboas, he sometimes calls Avicca the head of the thieves that is hiding out in a cave. Sometimes he takes the similar of a pond with water where all the fishes are hiding, and then pulling out the water, then one sees the fishes, and when one catches the fishes, and one catches the last fish. So there are different similars that point to the same thing. Once one has the experience made by himself, then one knows what the simile actually means. As long as one doesn't understand, one has to take the simile as a guidance. And when we recall what the Lord Buddha tells about his own teaching, then he tells it's a pointer to the truth. It's not the truth itself. So let us remember that. He gives pointers along the path. He gives many pointers along the path. But the pointers itself are pointers to something. If we haven't gone the path, we do not actually know what the pointers are or what they are pointing to. We can memorize the words of the pointers, but we actually do not know the experience that is the source of it, where this pointer, for instance, tanha, points to. What does tanha mean? What does avijja mean? What does dukkha mean? What does greed and hate mean? They're just, for us at the moment, they are just words where we have quite a bit of understanding or views and opinions about it. So I want you to remember this. When we talk about the teachings of the Lord Buddha, then they are pointers to something that we actually, when we go the path, can experience for ourselves. That's why I said, ehi pasiko. It's clear and obvious for everybody who has gone the path. It can be clearly seen within one's own heart. It can be clearly experienced within one's own heart. Just the memory of it is not enough. The memory of that all the things in this world, when we attach to it, brings dukkha in our heart, is not enough to let go of the dukkha. The understanding of what is actually taking place, that will remove the dukkha from our heart, or that will remove greed and hate. Only if we understand it, or only if we go the path the Lord Buddha so kindly teaches us, then we will understand. And we understand this kind of understanding or this kind of insight takes place within our heart. Once we have the experience, we can talk about the experience. Once we talk only about in terms of memories, what we remember this teacher said, or that teacher said, or the Lord Buddha said, then it's still not our own experience. So, when you talk, remember that. Did you really understand what it means? If you know it within your heart, then there is no doubt that you really understood it. If you can doubt it, what you understood, then you really have not yet understood it completely. Then you still have to do the exercise or do the practice until you really understand. Once you really understood it, once you really saw inside the true nature of things, then there is no question. And that is the way how an anagami knows that he is an anagami, and that is the way how an arahant knows that he is an arahant, because he has seen the truth within his own heart. So, it's not really important to know or give it a name to this phenomenon of avijja. I call it avijja or call it the khandhas. But what is happening in the path of process or on the path of training samadhi, you can see or distinguish two things. One thing is called the observer, and one thing is called the object observer. This is what you can distinguish. The observer is not the object observed, and the object observed is not the observer. However you call it, if you call it observer or if you call it heart and phenomena, it does not matter. It's duality. Observer is not the object observed. So when we observe the word Buddha, or when we observe the breath, we are not the breath. The breath is happening. The breath we can call it a phenomena that arises and ceases and changes. But the one who knows about this arising and ceasing and changing cannot be this arising, ceasing and changing. He cannot be the breath. I hope you understand. And it's the same thing with investigation. One who investigates the skin, he cannot be the skin. One who investigates the flesh, he cannot be the flesh. He knows about the flesh. He knows about the investigation. He knows about tearing it up, dissecting it, and breaking it up. And it's the same thing with thinking. We know that a thought arose. So, the one who knows that this thought arose, is he the thought? He cannot be. It's just, if we look at a leaf, or if we look at a flower, are we the flower? We see the flower, we observe the flower, or we see this animal, or we observe this animal, but are we this animal? So can we be the thought that arises? Anicca anatta dukkha. So reflect about that as anicca anatta dukkha. Especially anatta. That is not me, that doesn't belong to me, that is not myself. This arises and ceases and changes all the time. Whatever arises and ceases and changes all the time, that cannot be myself. So whoever knows about these things, whoever knows about this arising nature or ceasing nature or changing nature or the nature of anatta or the nature of dukkha, cannot be the dukkha itself, cannot be that anicca itself, or cannot be anatta itself. It's something different. So there's always somebody who knows and somebody and something that is to be known about. That is the world of duality. It only vanishes in that moment when we train samadhi, when the observer and the object observe become one point. That's why it's called one-pointed. One point is just one point. There's no other point. And in one-pointedness, this whole world of duality disappears. That's why we say this whole world disappears and our body disappears. Because our body is out of this, what is it called? Is it samut? Yeah. Samuti. Samudaya. It has to disappear. Once the knowingness and the object of knowing becomes one. All the other thing, the duality has to cease. And that's why we call it such a big wonder. We have actually seen beyond, or we have experienced non-duality. Maybe for a moment or maybe for a longer time. And once we come back, you know, we are so startled that this could have ever happened. Because as long as we have lived, we have never experienced. So I hope this also answers your question. There was another question that was raised. That is, what is, when I say self-consciousness and mindfulness has nothing to do. How can one say that? What is mindfulness? What is awareness? Mindfulness is mindful of what is going on. Awareness is aware of what is going on. And this is what I use when I want to translate sati. Sati is mindfulness or awareness. Just what is going on. So when we walk, then we are mindful either of the Buddha or we are mindful of the process of walking. That means the process, the mindfulness of what kind of muscles are moving. The mindfulness of what our skin is coming in contact with, or whatever you choose. Mindfulness or sati is explained by the Lord Buddha in a very, very descriptive way. He said, when we waking up, we are mindful of waking up. When we are opening our eyes, we are mindful of opening our eyes. When we get up, we are mindful of getting up. When we dress ourselves, we are mindful of dressing ourselves. When we are wearing our clothes, we are mindful of wearing the clothes. We are aware that the cloth and the making contact with the skin. So self-consciousness is thinking, I'm walking, is thinking, I'm doing this, is thinking, I'm doing that, is thinking, how mindful am I? But what has it to do with mindfulness? The big difference is there. I'm thinking. When I'm mindful, I'm actually not thinking, I'm observing or knowing of the things that are happening. I'm aware of the things that are happening. So when I think I'm practicing very well, that has nothing to do with practice. It's just one thought. What does a thought have to do with reality? Reality is much more closer to being aware of what is happening. If we are aware that a thought arises, it stays on and it ceases, that is called mindfulness. If I grab the thought and that thought happened to be, oh, I'm practicing pretty good, then this is not mindfulness. It's grabbing the thought and grabbing the contents of the thought. So mindfulness has already gone. So that is the difference. That's why I say self-consciousness. And that's what I call self-consciousness. Being conscious of what one is doing. Being conscious in the way of thinking of what one is doing. Or how good one is. And when you look at yourself, and when you, if you just observe what is all the time coming in the mind, I want this, I don't want this. I am like this, I am like that. It's thoughts that come into our mind. But what does it have to do with mind? When we are mindful, we see a thought coming in, and then we pull back our attention back to the object of attention. That is either the breath, or the Buddha, or the object of investigation. That is called mindfulness, that is called awareness. Self-consciousness is not this. Self-consciousness builds on thoughts. I am like this, I am like that, I want this, I don't want that. That's where I use the word self-consciousness. So that is the big difference. So when I'm sweeping, when I'm really mindfully sweeping, I'm not even aware that I am sweeping. In the end, mindfulness just becomes the process of sweeping. And whatever I do, then it doesn't matter if I'm sweeping or washing my clothes. When there is mindfulness presently 100%, there is just sweeping and there is just washing the clothes or washing the floor or washing or cleaning up the wood. There is no I in it. So that is the big difference between self-consciousness, because self-consciousness always knows what one is doing. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing fine, I'm doing not fine, I'm happy, I'm unhappy, I'm sad, I'm depressed or whatever. I have a lot of pain. But what does it have to do with reality? That's why I say, let's go back down and do and see what it really means. Break it up. What does it mean? I'm sweeping, what does it mean? I'm walking, what does it mean? And that will foster our mindfulness. That will foster the awareness of what is actually going on. And now I'm out of breath, so I will stop here.